thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 23 of Ireland's Best Business Podcast, hosting on the 26th of February, 2021. I am Conal O'Moran. This week on the world's only gender-balanced business show, we have surpassed ourselves with three great women-led businesses, along with another business led by a man and woman. All good. In a minute, we'll hear about a business making high-quality organic CBD and hemp products. That's cannabis extract to you and me. Grown and manufactured in Ireland, heading for the European markets. We have a first-of-its-kind natural prenatal fertility supplement specially developed by an Irish company to help support female fertility. And COVID has changed the plans of a Carlow-based plant nursery for the better, and that includes one of our famous pivots. And for every student that was hoping that exams may be a thing of the past in a post-COVID world, well, sorry, a company called TestReach.com has just dashed your dreams. We are That Great Business Show, and we do want to hear from you, so do contact us via LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or by plain old email, producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com will get us. And that's exactly what one of our guests did, and that's why she's joining us today. That Great Business Show is brought to you courtesy of DeFacto, the all-natural, mayo-based shaving oil brand with world ambitions. Founder Tom Murphy is looking for top distributors of grooming products around the world to bring the world's best shaving oil to skin worldwide. If you know someone in the shaving or grooming business anywhere at all, please tell Tom about them on DeFactoShave.com. He's on a mission to build a world brand, one shave at a time.
Business Show.
And we have many, many different reasons as to why we set up a business. It could be the dream of making lashings of cash, or to take control, in some sense, of your own life. Or a common one is that great big idea that has kept you awake for nights on end. Which is ironic, because our first guest on That Great Business Show this week is Fergus Kerrigan, co-founder of Ethos CBD, one of whose big ideas is a cannabis-based product meant to help you sleep better. Fergus's business partner is Amy O'Flaherty, who was in media and content marketing, but COVID means she cannot join us today. A huge pity, as I love hearing the real banter between founders as I try to guess who's really the boss. Fergus, thanks for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Who's the boss?
That would depend who you'd ask.
Well, I'm asking you, and if you don't say Amy...
I'll go with Amy. Yeah. I think that's safer.
Amy, I'm sorry you cannot join us today. We would have had a bit of fun. You better tell the world about Ethos CBD. What's the legislation around CBD being a cannabis extract in Ireland at the moment? It's all changed.
Yeah, it's all changed. It's sold in Ireland today as a food supplement, and you can find it mainly in your local pharmacies or health food stores. The regulation has been changing quite a lot over the last couple of years and is maturing well for those in the CBD industry. There's been some great rulings in the last 4 months, even at European level by the European Commission, the European Court of Justice and the UN, that says that CBD should be sold as a food supplement. It's not a narcotic. The World Health Organization have come out and said it's safe. So the regulation is going in the right way. But there is still some discrepancies at an Irish level with regulation. So we have three government or state bodies that have slightly differing rules on the law. So everyone, I think, in the industry is hopeful over the next year that we'll get on the one page. It's clear for everyone. And it's just better for the market in general.
It is harsh, isn't it, that people are making difficulties around CBD?
It is. But I can understand it as well. Like, it's a very new industry. Cannabis in general has a lot of negative connotations from the past, and it just takes time at a government level. The market accelerates quickly when people see opportunities, but it takes time for governments and rules to nearly follow with it. So they're a little bit behind at the moment, but I think there is a lot of work being done. The FSAI, the Food Safety Authority, they're the ones who, I suppose, govern CBD products in pharmacies and health food stores. And I think they are working very closely with the hemp bodies here in Ireland, and we have regular meetings with them. So people are starting to work together now for the better of the industry.
You said the hemp bodies. Are there many?
There are two at the moment, the Hemp Cooperative Ireland and then Hemp Federation Ireland. I think I'm getting that right.
Is this the provisionals and the officials? Or
yeah, like I'm new enough to the hemp bodies, probably a year in them. An outsider joining, you're like, why aren't we all just on the one page here? There may be reasons for that that I don't want to get involved in. We've enough going on, so I don't want to get to play the political game. But yeah, I think everyone should be just working in the same for the benefit of each other, you know.
Because there's there is the makings of a nice little business, not just for you, but for others.
There is, both on the CBD side, also on the farming side, which is huge.
Because you are buying your hemp from a Wicklow farmer.
Yeah, so we've partnered up with a Wicklow farmer, Ed Hanbidge, who I've known for the last few years. He's taught me a lot about hemp, how to grow it. And he is someone who does your regular farming, sheep. I think he does beef as well, but is diversified into hemp. There's a few Irish farmers starting to do that now. But if we can create the markets, be it CBD, but like hemp has so many other uses, from bioplastics to fiber to clothing, you know. So if we, and I know like even in China, there's a huge demand now for hemp for clothing, for the fabric. So if we can create the markets, this could be a great strategy to diversify for Irish farmers and make some extra cash off their
land. It really is lovely to hear that, because we are going back around in a circle. Ropes were made from hemp once upon a time. Clothes were made from hemp once upon a time.
Thousands of years ago, hemp was being used. Then it got prohibition in the States. I think when people came back from the war, they started smoking cannabis, like weed. And then there was just a prohibition.
Which war?
I think it was at the end of the First World
was
War.
It? That's interesting.
Then they prohibited cannabis in its entirety for like 70 or 80, 90 years. And hemp is part of the cannabis family. Now, it doesn't have the components that provide that high effect that people think of when they talk about weed. But just the fact that it was part of the family, it got prohibited as well. So it stopped being used across the world. But now we see the resurgence of it being used for CBD products, but for all those other uses I spoke about. So, and it's unbelievable for the environment.
You were a lawyer.
I was training to be a lawyer, yes. And then I
became an outlaw.
Yes, and that was a great decision. So when I live quite close to the four courts, and when I see them on a day-to-day basis, I'm not jealous of being a lawyer. So that was one good decision I think I've made in my life.
What is the opportunity for you and your business?
It's big, I think.
What's big?
Big. We're really focused. Our whole thing is about creating these natural health products that can better a person's either physical or mental well-being. Now, our focus at the moment is hemp-derived CBD-related products. We have a range of oils at the moment, but we are looking at a number of different products that fit in under that category of being able to help someone with their physical or mental well-being. And there's lots of opportunity in that space. We're focused on Ireland, and we're just moving into Northern Ireland at the moment, and then the UK will be our next market. But when we spoke about the regulation at the start of the show, there's a lot of actually European countries, there's a lot that are further ahead than us on regulation, but there's a lot of markets that are less mature. So we're eyeing up some of those less mature markets that we'll see will be maybe like Ireland in 2-3 years' time. And there's opportunities there to go with, to export our products to.
There's a term that they use, which is the addressable market. How big is that for you?
In terms of value?
Value, yeah.
Yeah, so between Ireland and the UK now, the market's valued at 1.5 billion, but said to grow by, I think it's 50% by 2024. So it's a pretty big market. But yeah, that's CBD specific. Like, we think there's opportunity in other plant-based medicines as well that we're looking at.
Really? That's interesting.
So when you bring in... And like, there's stuff we use in our products, like adaptogenic herbs, mushrooms is even another thing. There's lots of opportunities out there. So if you bring in those, I couldn't give you value on it, but it brings in a bigger addressable market, as you say.
Of course. You, as I mentioned only a few seconds ago, were a lawyer. Where did you get all this knowledge about mushrooms and hemp?
Well, it all started with a curiosity, and it all, for me, the business started because of my own health issues. About 2.5 years ago, went through a period, 9 months of really poor health, just constantly fatigued, migraines. And I went to the doctor, as we all do, and I went there, and like for all the wonders of doctors and traditional Western medicine, sometimes it doesn't work. So I was treated for my symptoms, which were migraines, so I got rounds and rounds of antibiotics, but it actually transpired I had a gut-related issue. So these antibiotics are making me sicker and sicker. So at the time, I was getting sicker. I would have tried anything. I went to a functional medicine doctor who kind of looks more at the root cause of the problem. She changed up my diet completely at the time, more plant-based medicine, and introduced me to CBD and other food supplements. So after 3 months, literally my life was changed because I was in a bad place, you know, health-wise. So that's what kind of triggered my curiosity for CBD and what it can do. And it's like, you know, why can't we create a high quality product here that's made with Irish hemp? So that's where the curiosity started. And like nearly everyone, where do you start? You nearly start on Google. Who knows something about this? Because I know nothing. And then you talk to people, and Ed was one of the first people I talked to. From there,
he's your farmer.
He's our farmer. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Ed. And then he introduced me to other people. You grow your network, you learn. And I think if you're curious, like you can actually pick up a lot in a few years, it's been for me.
Now, speaking of growing, if you are growing your hemp, which is down in Wicklow, what do you then do when you harvest it?
Yeah, so we'll harvest it in like August, September every year. You take that crop and then you extract the CBD from it.
And so, where do you do that?
Yeah, we have a lab in Sandyford. So that's where we'll extract and then formulate each of the products. So we'll add those adaptogenic herbs that I spoke about. We also use essential oils, both to flavor the products, but also for their therapeutic properties as well. So that's where we do all that in Sandyford.
That sounds like very precise type of manufacturing.
It is. The extraction side, I suppose, is the precise type of it, precise part of it.
Because you have to get a consistency. It's like alcohol. I shouldn't maybe mix the two ever. But, you know, 40% proof. Everything has to be 40% proof. And in your case, your cannabis oil has to be...
It has to be the percentage that you say is on it. So we have a 4% and a 2%. So we will send our products to Eurofins, which is a big lab in the UK, who can test the cannabinoid content. So they'll tell you exactly what percentage of your CBD. And there's hundreds of other... CBD is called a cannabinoid. Basically, it's just a chemical molecule. But there's actually hundreds of others in the hemp plant. A lot of them are unresearched and not discovered. But it's all those together. So you'll send that to a lab, get it tested, and make sure that you have the right properties in the product.
So it comes back here, and then you start your bottling, do you?
Yeah, start your formulating, really. So we'll have our other extracts that we add to it, be it chamomile or ashwagandha, which is the herb and the essential oils, and that's where we'll add them to the products, bottle and get them to customers.
Why I specifically mentioned that Amy, your partner in the business, was in media and content marketing, because I'm not seeing either a doctor or a chemist or a pharmacologist or aura?
Well, we've worked with them over the last 2 years. So that's been the big thing. We've worked with herbalists, functional medicine doctors, nutritionists, all to get advice on what to go into the product. And then we've worked with Ed, who's actually is an expert in the extraction side of things. So yeah, we've had all the right... we're not doctors by trade. We're learning a lot about the science things, but we've been strongly advised. Both that and the regulation is why it's taken us 2 years nearly to launch, because like we were adamant in getting the right advice of what goes into the products, learning all the extraction side of things. Otherwise, we could have launched 2 years ago.
And 2 years is a long time waiting to start selling, which means there was an investment.
There was, yeah. We did a small seed, a decent size just seed round to get us off the ground. And that's been good. Like we've kept a pretty lean business model right now. Like we're nearly profitable instantly. But we're
really, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we've gone. You know, you can really go heavy investment at the start, and then you grow the business differently. We've done it a bit smaller, organically. Go and kind of test the market. We're really seeing now like the retention rate of our customers is going up literally day by day, which is great. That's the kind of the big metric we like to see, because we just know people are getting the benefits from it. But we know that if we want to scale and we want to compete, there's a lot of money coming into this market now. You'll have your big farmer coming in. So we'll know that we will need to raise more investment probably with this year. to take the business where we want to take it.
More online, or are you distributing into pharmacies or into health food stores?
Yeah, so we kicked off it online, really, and we were grateful to be able to do that during the pandemic. And now, since January, we've come on board at one distributor, hoping to have sign an agreement with another one in March, in the next couple of weeks. And we've already, we're adding health foods and pharmacies week by week now, which is great. And then it has been a challenge that you can't meet people face to face in the selling side, I think. So, well, hopefully that will kind of accelerate once we can get on the road now.
Just the two of you?
There's two others now that have joined, kind of on the fulfillment side, and another, someone helping support Amy on the marketing and branding side. And then plenty of family help wherever you can get it, cheap labor.
And hours worked. How many hours a day are you working?
I'm working more hours a day than I did when I was a lawyer, but it doesn't feel like that.
I was reading, and I don't believe it, obviously, in, I think, the Sunday Business Post last week, one of these kind of super macho businessmen claiming that he works 20 hours a week. Now, we work hard, but 20 hours a week is the height of bull.
20 hours a week?
Oh, sorry, 20 hours a day.
I know, and there's this big, that's been a recurring theme for the last few years, these CEOs of boasting about how little they sleep. Like, we're all about how much you can sleep, because the science is there behind it. So
it's good for you.
It's good for you. And I have a nice balanced life. The big difference from when I was working in the corporate world or as a lawyer is, like, there's no Monday to Friday. But as I said, I enjoy every minute of it. So, like, it doesn't really feel, I feel liberated, even though you're probably working longer.
And your first export market, because you mentioned it, is into Northern Ireland. Has that started?
It's just kicked off with our first two retailers, and we're talking to a distributor up there. But we've actually got a bit of traction from some direct retailers there. So it's literally kicked off in the last week, very fresh. But that's kind of going to be a big focus in the next few weeks.
And in trying to differentiate yourselves from others, I know that the whole brand is very clean, very organic, and even the name Ethos. You mentioned that Big Pharma is going to come in. Big Pharma is going to come in and eat your lunch and your breakfast and probably your tea as well.
Yeah, they're going to try, I suppose. We're aware of that.
Does that not keep you awake at night?
It does. Yeah, of course it does. That's the challenge of it. But I think, like, people connect with brands. They connect with genuine stories, and that can be more powerful. Like, I've seen even in the States, like, there's the brands with huge money, but you just know there's no substance behind it. They're the ones that aren't performing as well as the ones with a story. You know there's quality behind it. There's actually a bit of love gone into the products. So they do win out in a lot of the cases. Money isn't everything. And I'm confident that if we can create high quality products, I think we have, like, really innovative ideas for both the products we've produced, but some products we've coming that I think are going to, they're not there yet. And creativity and stuff, that's money can't buy creativity. Maybe it can if you get the right people. Money can help us get a better team, but there's a lot more than money. So it keeps me awake at night, but it's good. Keeps you on your toes.
Well, you and Amy have now joined Team GBS, That Great Business Show. What can we, the team, do for you?
One thing I suppose me and Amy are always looking for is good mentors, because, like, just people who've kind of been there and done it. We're new to business. We don't have all the answers. So if there's anyone probably in the consumer goods space that we could learn from, we'd always love to network.
I think you should talk to Tom Murphy, the boss of De Facto Shave, because he has been in the industry for a long time.
I'll talk to Tom, Tom for this present he's given us here. The big thing then as well, Conal, is that we're going out to pharmacies and health food stores now. So if people are interested in the brand, like, the quality of the products is there. And as I said to you, customers are coming back and back. So I think there is an opportunity for retailers in Ireland.
And the final question, because this is the new thing that we have introduced, is somebody, anybody that you would hire in a heartbeat.
Yeah, there's probably two powerhouses that come to mind. Jeff Bezos and Derek Kerrigan, who is my dad.
This is becoming a theme, because last week we had two people saying
I heard that as well. And I was like, I can't say my dad, but in fairness to him,
Is he in business?
He's an entrepreneur as well. But if there's a problem to be solved, he's the man to solve it. If he can't solve it himself, he'll find the right guy. So
there's your mentor.
Yeah, he is a mentor. Jeff Bezos would probably bring a little bit more vision and cash.
A lot of cash.
So that's maybe a good team.
That sounds good to me. Fergus Kerrigan and the absent Amy, thank you so much for joining us on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
Continuing today's theme, I have another founder with me now who set up her own business to deal with her own issue, in this case, her fertility. Nua Fertility was started by Deborah Brock, as she has first-hand experience of the challenges of trying for a baby. That experience gave her insight into the reality of fertility problems that many face. Her search for solutions grounded in science led to the importance of nutrition for fertility and the amazing world of the microbiome and microbes and how they are a key determinant to fertility health. Deborah, Nua Fertility founder and CEO, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to ask you the most bizarre question.
Oh, great.
Talk to me about Rod Stewart.
I think that's my comments when I'm trying to explain to people about male infertility or male fertility.
I was listening to a podcast by you, and when you mentioned the kind of the Rod Stewart image, I just resonated. I get that. So explain from the very beginning for our male listeners.
Yeah, I suppose I think one of the things that we're brought up to believe is that you will, you'll have a baby, that it naturally will happen, that you will touch a guy and you'll get pregnant. This is just it. It's such an Irish thing. And throughout school, you were always taught how to avoid something, not necessarily how to actually achieve something. And it's the same for men. Mostly, I suppose, a lot of the time when we talk about fertility, we think of women and we think immediately that it's a female issue. But actually, when we look at fertility or infertility, it's actually 40% a male issue and 40% a female issue, and 20% is unknown. So it's an equal disease. And I suppose for me, because we went through the struggles, and like I said, you grow up thinking, you know, I got married, I was lucky, I met my soulmate, and thought, you know, my path is going to continue in that blissful, beautiful way. And it didn't. We were thrown into this world of infertility, thrown into this world of unknown, and with doctors. And I say this all the time. I was and my husband, he will be the exact same. We were very passive patients. And when we were told we couldn't get pregnant, we were told quite bluntly, you will not get pregnant naturally. And then at the same time, the doctor proceeded to say to me, everything looks great, Deborah, you're great. And turned to my husband, well, it's your issue. And that's how it was delivered to my husband, which meant that he switched off for a full year. And he'll admit it now, it was a very male thing for him because he felt like his manhood was attacked. It wasn't really explained. And then the delivery of the message to get that news that, you know, you are not going to give your wife who you love the one thing in the world that, you know, you both want. So
unlike Rod Stewart.
Yes.
Because Rod Stewart, the point about Rod Stewart is he has many babies by many wives or girlfriends.
Well,
or
it's at his later age, I think, as well. That we make the comparison that guys maybe think that they have all this time on their hands and that there isn't actually going to be an issue. But actually, age does come into play with male and male fertility. And if we think about it in the last 40 years, what the research is now really indicating is that male sperm count has dropped by 50%. Now, that's a shocking statistic. I don't want it to be a scary statistic, but it is a statistic that make you think, hey, hang on a minute. There may be issues with my sperm count or motility or morphology. It's so basically the shape or how they swim and or how many you have. So for us, I guess, at Neurofertility, it's really important we talk about fertility health. And we talk about future fertility because I wish I was told at 27 that we would have been thrust into the difficulties and the challenges and had to go down the IVF. Well, for us, it was ICSI, which is to do with sperm. And if I had been told that a bit earlier, I definitely would have armed myself with information. I would have been more informed about what I could do, what the choices I could make. Because for us, when we went through it, as I was saying earlier, we were so passive that we just looked at the doctors and thought, yes, they're miracle workers. They know exactly what they're doing. You know, the usual Irish thing. Yeah, we looked at them. You're nodding your head at me. And we didn't do anything. Like, we walked away. And I guess after three failed cycles, and not to talk about the monetary value of what that costs as well, because in Ireland...
It is chunky.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't have any supports here. There's no state supports for this. So you would think that we would have learned a lesson and really understood and did something differently. No. So by a fourth round, we suddenly it was like this, I say it all the time, a light bulb moment went off and went, okay, we actually have a really big role to play in our fertility. And we changed our lifestyle. We looked at our nutrition. We looked at, like, nobody mentioned to my husband about smoking. He was still smoking. And we looked, you know, our diet, what exercise we were or weren't doing. And we changed clinics. And we met the most progressive doctor. And what I mean progressive was she listened. She actually said, okay, guys, we all, I call it now, it's like a fertility jigsaw. Every piece of that puzzle needs to come together to get that fuller picture. So you need to get the full picture of your fertility health. So for us, that was just really important.
But the benefit, one of the upsides, two of the upsides. Mm-hmm. One is you now have an almost 9-year-old daughter.
Yep.
And the other one is that you have a business.
Yes.
So let us talk. We are the business show. Yes. We're not the fertility show.
We could be.
That great fertility show.
Yes, I like the sound of that.
What's the business? And so, what have you done with it? You've been at it for 3.5 years.
4 years, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I suppose for me, because just, and I'll really quickly go into it. I always worked with people and communities. So that's in my heart. So when we went through our own struggles, doing something to support others who are going through their own challenges and struggles is where it would have always sat with me. And I'm nosy. I am absolutely nosy or curious.
Join my club.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, look, we've got a family of five. You kind of have to be when you grow up like that. So I would have researched quite a lot when it came to myself and Mark through our fertility. And from that, I stumbled on the microbiome and was suddenly like, hang on a minute, why isn't anybody talking about this connected to your fertility? Because when I realized that the surface size of your GI tract is the same as a tennis court, it just logically think about that inside your body. Of course, that has an effect or a knock-on effect in your overall well-being and everything else. So that made me really explore that further. Quickly moving on, went to ABC Microbiome, amazing scientists, and right. Started...
What is ABC Microbiome?
So ABC Microbiome are one of the world's most renowned research centres based in Cork. Microbiologists who are looking at the microbiome, looking at good and bad bacteria. They're just phenomenal, like absolutely phenomenal. So I approached them about this connection between the gut microbiome and also the vaginal microbiome. And now we also have the male reproductive microbiome. That's another day's work. But so we just started exploring then that idea of this connector and looking, it led then into product development. It just kind of slowly moved that way. And at that point, it was myself later on, and it ended up developing, and we've produced and so formulated and manufactured our own fertility supplement, but with a microbiome focus.
But you had no background at all in that whole business.
No, but I'm a researcher, right? So I'm constantly trying to connect the dots.
You're not a researcher in matters, or weren't in matters scientific, or matters gut, or matters
nope.
Like that? No.
No, but I guess for me, because I had my own challenges and experiences and I had those difficulties, I wanted to solve a problem. And because I'm curious or nosy or a researcher, that led me to continuously do that. And then I approach the people who are the experts. That's the whole point, you know, approach those who know what they're doing and work with them. And that's what happened. And it was a really, honestly, that's the way that things moved on. And then I guess I was really lucky that I approached, well, I banged on a few doors to get our product manufactured.
How difficult was that?
You know, the difficulty in it was a case of just believing in yourself, picking up the phone and talking, and then pretending I had a bigger team behind me was...
As they say, fake it till you make it.
Yeah, I did a lot of that. Yeah. I absolutely
Everybody in business does that.
I've learned that now, which is great to know. but it was a really good It's a really good process, I suppose, for me as well, though. So the company that we ended up working with, who are manufacturing products, are based in Denmark, and now they're actually taken over by an American company. So they're a really, really big player, a really big global player on this platform. And what interested them as well was they could see the potential of a new product. So this wasn't something that either that they had done before. So that was going to be an interesting aspect for them to work with. And they got the, I suppose, me, the passion, the pushing the business and where it could go.
So what is the product?
So it's a food supplement. It's a fertility supplement, but we're focused on the microbiome.
So if you want to become pregnant, you're saying, take this, it'll help.
I will never say that. So my motto absolutely is there is no magic pill, no magic doctor, no magic clinic, no magic anything in the world that's going to make you have a baby. But what you can do is take things that are going to help you take control, that are going to get you prepared to be as best as you can be and get your body in the best position that it can be for pregnancy. And that's what we are saying. I can say now, we actually, since we've launched, we've had 7 successful pregnancies from people who've been taking the product. We're hopefully now we're going to be going into clinical trials with an IVF clinic to focus on our product development. But I would never say that, because if somebody told me that when I was going through my challenges, I'd
Okay.
Yeah, you can see what I would probably do.
So you are at product development after almost 4 years. Not the overnight success.
No, slow. Slow because it's just...
That's real business.
Yeah, I figure that now. I think it's slow in the sense of, I've spoken about this a few times, because I remember at the start of the journey of switching from an employee to an entrepreneur, right? And I remember people talking about their stories and how amazing they were and where they got. And I was like, this is amazing. How'd you jump? And they'd look at me and go, what do you mean, how'd you jump? And I say, well, how did you go from being an employee to an entrepreneur and have a mortgage and possibly children or not, but, you know, have financial commitments. Oh, well, it was, and you never really got a straight answer from anybody because it wasn't a straight road. So for me, it was that case of, I also was in a job that I absolutely loved. You know, I was in a very senior management position. I had a team of 11 who were just fantastic. I worked with communities around supporting them. So leaving that, you know, to move into another passion area was great. But I was lucky enough to get into the New Frontiers program, which was an amazing support to me. It absolutely gave me that first launching pad, which I think people, you know, need.
And for those who don't know, the New Frontiers, that is an EI supported.
It's an Enterprise Ireland, yeah, supported program. And it's run through the technical university. So I did it in Blanchardstown, and they partner with Tala.
And look, what would you have learned there, and what was the benefit for you there?
You know, apart from obviously you get to meet some really amazing people and colleagues that you can pick up the phone now and ask for advice when you're really having a wobbly, right, in business, when you're really going, oh my God, what have I done this for? One of the main things, you know, you go through the other aspects of from marketing to other business areas that I wasn't in, that wasn't my area of expertise prior to this. But what I really learned very much so was around the market research, really understanding your market, really knowing your customer. And I used to think that I was a bit of a fake, you know, that whole thing that people feel they're fake because I came from this not-for-profit world into this business world. And suddenly I realized it's actually still all about people. It's all about customers.
Are they all fake?
Oh, no. But, you know, and I got that and I loved that. Like we, you know, we really are trying to understand our customer as well. So suddenly I went, God, I can do this. I know what this is about. So it was a really, and it's a confidence booster. It gives you those early day skills.
And all of that research would have told you what your potential addressable market is or the value of it. How big a market is it?
Oh, well, like...
In value.
Do you know, I'll do it not in value and numbers. I'll do it more in Ireland alone. We have 1 in 6 couples suffer from infertility. It's heading towards 1 in 4. In the UK, it's 1 in 6. In China, it's 1 in 8. So globally, it's 1 in 8. This is a huge, huge problem, like a massive problem. So it is a very large market.
How do you measure infertility if somebody is trying for a baby, say, for a half year or a year? And nothing's happening. Is that infertility, or is there a time when you say, well, look, you've been at it for 2 years or 3 years or 5 years? Where is the point where you say there's an infertility issue, or the other one is just it's nature?
Yeah, no, I mean, the medical doctors would say if you are under 35 and you've been trying for over a year, then you should go and get some support.
Okay.
So over a year, under 35. Over 35, if you've been trying for 6 months and nothing's happening, you should go and get some supports and talk. And supports don't necessarily mean that you jump straight into an IVF clinic, right? Supports mean that you go talk to your GP, you get those local tests done, you check your AMH level, you get the sperm test done. Like that's, you know, usually people think
I'm laughing. You check your AMH levels. Now, if I were to ask you 3.5 years ago what your AMH levels are, would you have known? Please don't say you would have, because that ruins my little story.
Well, then will I be quiet?
Well,
3.5 years ago, I was thrown into it. Think about it. I'm 10 years plus.
Well, sorry.
So
okay, I should have
before,
said.
Before, yeah. Not a chance.
Yeah.
Now, I might have slightly heard my sister. She's a midwife and a nurse, right? So I'd hear her talking about different things. But it's to do with your egg reserve and for females specifically to look at that. But I think, you got your story.
You've answered my thing now. Is that it is your, because we don't use acronyms, you see.
No. And
your,
you know,
egg reserve.
Yes. And okay. That's actually better to say. And you're so right. My husband gives that to me all the time and says that I do that. I use acronyms all the time, like throwaway comments. But it's really important to get those early days tests done specifically. But also, I think what I would say to couples as well, or if you're on your own, is it doesn't happen the way we were told it would happen. It doesn't automatically happen. For every 100 couples, 80 of them will be pregnant in a year. So, like, really think about it. Is we have a very, very small window every month, very small, to get pregnant. And when you really drill down and think about it, you go, okay. And that sometimes gives people a little bit of a breather to go, there's not something wrong. It just does take that little bit longer. That's hard to say to somebody when all you really want to do is have a baby in your arms, you know?
Now, bring me back to business.
Business, yes.
The business that you say that you're now ready for trialing. When do you think you'll actually launch?
With regards to looking at a clinical?
No, beyond when you're like in and out.
We're in.
No, sorry. I mean, I'm hoping that you're going to go international with this now.
Yeah. Well, we've been selling. I'll bring it back. We've been selling since last August.
Yeah.
So we would have three main routes, online, retail and distribution.
And are you selling internationally online?
Yeah, we've just sold to Belgium. Okay. We sold to Germany. We're in the UK, quite a few orders into the UK and obviously Ireland. Our focus is Ireland, UK first and have penetration there.
How are you getting known there?
Our marketing efforts. I suppose one of the big key things that I did from the beginning was I built an advisory team. I'm a big believer in education and I'm a big believer in actually really listening to people and genuinely taking the advice that they give you because they've done it, they've made the mistakes. So we built an advisory team very early on who were experts. So we've a fertility specialist, we've a pharmacist, a GP, a nutritionalist, acupuncture for fertility acupuncture and fertility reflexology. And it's phenomenal because they become your champions. They become your ambassadors for newer fertility, and that's been working exceptionally well.
But how's that helping you? Say, did you say into Belgium, for example?
Well, actually, Belgium came because a friend of mine did a Ryan Tuberty show, and I'd asked her to write a blog for our website about her story because I really think the importance of telling your story. So she did. And then she got asked onto the Ryan Tuberty show. She mentioned us on the Ryan Tuberty show. The person who was listening was in Belgium and ordered in within 15 minutes of listening to. And she only mentioned our name. You know, we weren't actually on it. So that in itself is extremely powerful. But I suppose where we're going as well is, we secured a distributor here in Ireland. We have a distributor in Northern Ireland. We just secured our distributor for the UK last week. And we're in late talks now with a distributor for Australia, China. We have global ambition. It's never been small from the beginning because we know where we can go and we know where the challenges are for people.
Funding,
yeah. That's the interesting part, isn't it?
It seems to attract a lot of attention, yes.
Yeah.
Have you got funding?
Since the beginning, apart from our own you know, bootstrapping, some family and friends funding. Great state support we got from the local Leo. Our Wicklow Leo were amazing.
Well done, Wicklow Leo. They've been huge supporters.
Yep. Yeah, and the National Enterprise Week is coming up now in March. So if, you know, people are listening, it's just really well worth having a look at what's been offered in your local area, because they've been really big champions of us.
I'm doing something for Leo up in Donegal, actually, for the National Enterprise Week. So I'm looking forward to that. It really is a fantastic week. Anybody who wants to get into business should just go down, just smell, touch, feel, just talk to people, just say, oh yeah, I could do that.
Absolutely. And you should exhaust all those avenues first. Mm-hmm. So exhaust as much as you can get from them, which is what we've done. So we've exhausted that. So our next stage is to look at Enterprise Ireland potentially and investors. So we are now going to be looking for a seed round.
How much?
$500,000. So,
it's not inconsiderable.
Absolutely not. And I think we've got some very exciting products. We're launching our mail product now in the summer, and we have another 7 products in the pipeline. So, and we've potentially very nice, lucrative markets that are there.
Vast,
and I mean, really
China. Just to say China, you say woo. Yep,
I know, I don't say it well. I mean, again, China is huge, and not just from the size, but with regards to the fertility issues that are there. But I suppose it's realistic for us around China is because we are talking to a distributor who's been a great mentor to me for the last 2.5 years. So this is a very real opportunity, and they see the real opportunity. It's just about making sure that we approach this in a measured approach. You know, I'm very big on that. You know, I don't know if anyone else in their businesses, you run a mile and then you bring yourself back down to reality and you ground yourself and you go, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, you go, how many people have we got? Who's on the team? Have we got the resources? Have we got the capacity? What's the market entry like? You know, what are the regulations like? What's the language like? What's the cultural difference like? You know, you have to weigh all of these aspects out before we do anything. So I am very measured about it. And we have been from the beginning. And I think that's why we've been very successful to this point in what we were doing. We work hard, and I have a really strong team behind us who are just as passionate about this area of fertility health, and you can't buy that.
Speaking of a team, who would you hire in a heartbeat to join your team?
I would hire my daughter in a heartbeat.
So that's a new one.
Yeah. So Ella is 9.
Ella.
And
well done,
my
Ella.
Daughter Ella in the last year has told me how I can make money, bring in a puppy, because everybody loves puppies, Mum. That's the best thing to do. She has wanting to have her own YouTube channel. She's gone away. She's come back to me, pitched to me what her YouTube channel would be like, the concept, how she was going to make money from it. This is my 9-year-old. She also then, she's coming up with a hair product. Because we have,
I need one of those.
Yeah. And do you know what, though, about Ella is that she knows that you have to work hard to get something. She knows that you don't get handed something. She's got a really lovely heart and she's very kind. And I think they're really good qualities. And she's honest. You know, she can explain what we do to somebody in a heartbeat and there's nothing behind it. It's just pure honesty. And I think that's what I want in our team.
I think honesty. We'll say, Ella, you're hired.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So anybody who wants to give you money will find you where?
Anybody who wants to, we are looking for investment, but we are also looking for people who are the same, who are like us, who will have the skill sets that we don't have. He's going to bring something more than money. I know that may sound so...
That's called, but smart money, wise money.
Yes. And I think that's what we need, and we will learn from that, and that's what we'd like to do. So if you are, our website is www.newafertility.com, and I'm Deborah@newafertility.com. And if there is anyone else who's listening as well who have any difficulties or challenges, we just landed our first clinic last week, IVF clinic.
Thank you.
And they're a brand new clinic and they're amazing. So we've got a lot of resources and supports and other that we can connect you with people. So do come onto our website and have a look.
And it is NUA, N-U-A. NUA.
NUA.
NUA Fertility. Good. That is Deborah Brock. Deborah, thank you so much for joining Team GBS, and we are out there batting for you from now on.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
We had Joe Brown from Joe Brown Skincare, a fantastic entrepreneur from Hackettstown in County Carlow, on That Great Business Show a few weeks back. Whatever it is in the water in Hackettstown, well, it's thrown up another great little business. I was particularly keen to have Katrina Cullen of Cullen Garden Nurseries on the show to prove that the system does work. I've said it before, I'll say it again, that we do get an awful lot of requests to come on to Ireland's Best Business Podcast, so we do ask for your patience. However, Katrina was more persistent, and it was clear she's beyond proud of her family business and that she deserves to have her story told. Katrina, welcome to That Great Business Show. Why did you contact us?
I contacted you, Conal, because it's all in the name. It is That Great Business Show, and I feel that we are a great business and worthy of a spot.
Katrina, you will be welcome back anytime. Hopefully. You just keep saying that, reciting that, and I and the team will love you so much. Tell us about the business.
So, Cullen Nurseries, we are growers and suppliers of native trees and hedging. We are based in Hackettstown, County Carlow, and you're right, there's something in the water, but there's also something in the air. It's that fresh mountainy air. Business was started 25 years ago by my husband, Robert. He had done horticulture in Multifarnham. Robert has actually never worked for anybody else. He's always been self-employed. And very shortly after taking on the mantle of self-employment, he took his father into the business with him, and the two of them went about landscaping gardens. They had always grown their own produce. Peter has been a forestry man for years, all his life. And they started to sell what was left over. So if there was stuff left over, they'd sell that out to other customers. And the business just grew from there. In 2009, we were very lucky that we were able to buy land in a recession, which was a great achievement, I think. And we started to grow homegrown trees and hedging, native bare root trees and hedging on our land in Ballisalla. We're sitting right under a beautiful place called Eagle Hill. We're under Mount Leinster. We see Sligo in Wexford and Lugnaquilly in Wicklow. So we're right in the heart of the countryside. I left my job in 2019.
What was the job?
I was a quality control manager in a local abattoir. So I had spent 10 years in that role.
Were you happy to get out?
I was happy for the change, but at the same time, I was very good at my job and I was very comfortable in my job, and they were a good company to work for. They were very understanding of the struggle for working mammies. So they were very understanding for that, but I was good at my job. I'd spent a long time carving out a career. And
what madness made you leave permanent and pensionable, or, you know, steady income?
Robert had been at me for a couple of years that the nursery could sustain the two of us, but I was afraid. I have to say, fear. And I know now that fear is false evidence, appearing realistic. But we had a small family at the time. We've three young boys. I was a bit nervous, yeah. I had always done the books and I'd always been involved. But what he was talking about was the two of us pulling a wage out. And I was afraid. I had a good job and good money coming in every week, regardless of whether the sun was shining or the rain was falling, because our work is very dependent on the weather. It's a challenge. But in 2019, we'd come to a crossroads. Either my career would pause or Cullen Nurseries expansion would pause. And I took the selfish route and I chose that Cullen Nurseries would expand. So I left it.
That's not selfish.
It probably felt a bit selfish at the time.
I think that's just pure brave.
Yeah, it was brave, I suppose. Yeah, brave is probably a word. But I have to say, I grieved my job for a long time. I was very good at my job and I loved it. It was dynamic and changing the whole time. You were always thinking, you were always on your feet.
And you're not doing any of that in Cullen's Nurseries?
I am, but for the first while, I was literally in a field on my own, learning about trees, and my husband was my boss. And that is not how it is inside the four walls of the house, but this is the way it was in work. But along with being efficient, I'm very stubborn. And I said, we have to make this work. It's as simple as. So I listened and I learned and I took his 25 years of experience and I just absorbed as much of it as I could.
You probably had absorbed a whole heap of it anyway.
I had. And I'd always done, like I said, I'd always done the books and the figures and kept an eye on that for him. But I didn't know the difference between a beech hedge and a laurel hedge for many years, even though it was our business. So I educated myself through him with that. I was, like I said, I did grieve my job for the first while, but I remember the day I thought I had it all. my little boy Joe was starting school. A shocking independent child, the youngest of three boys, he has to be. And I dropped him to school and I was the one at the school gate. And I hadn't had that for years because of my job. And he came down the school gate, shoved his school bag or whatever at me. He put his little hand in mine and I said, "How was your day?" And he said, "Grand." And every day it was grand, but every day he held my hand. So I considered the trade was fair. It was so low, especially when
magic
it's your last
moments
magic
that you can
moments.
Never ever buy or give back.
Yes.
Or
yep. And the other two were still in school for an hour later. So I had that hour with him and I didn't have that with the other two when they had started school first. It was somebody else doing the school run.
Is Joe your favourite?
No, he's not my favourite. I love them all individually. I love them all. They all have separate traits of
That's
both
what
Robert
every
and
mammy
I.
And daddy says.
Yes, they do. Yeah. But it's just because he was so independent and it was such a special time. And I knew then I'd made the right decision. I had that work-life balance that all parents crave. Not all get
but
to that point.
It is tough. It's a tough business.
It is a tough business. And then
you mentioned the weather.
Yeah, the weather. Yeah, you can't control the weather.
What does it feel like when you're standing in, you know, a 4.6 or 4.7 and wind and rain going where it shouldn't?
Well, you see, we had, even this year we had it, like there was two storms. I think it was Frances and Emma. And Emma was supposed to do damage and she didn't. So then we got cocky and we thought, sure, Frances would be grand. And Frances wasn't grand. You know, and like that knocks you. And it like nobody realises the time and the effort that goes into what we do and getting a plant from a baby plant that we line in, that we mind as best we can to lift out of the ground to sell. Nobody sees that. Like in April last year, we had a month of drought and in May we'd frost. Like, and that's knocking you back the whole time and it has that effect. But then Mother Nature is great and she will balance these things out. But there's always a challenge. So then in October 2019, when I got all the little people to school and we had a little system set up, I said, you know what? If we're going to grow, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to educate myself. I'm going to upskill and I'm going to do this right. So we went to our local enterprise office.
And Carlo,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we met a wonderful individual called Pauline Hochter and she was fantastic. So we both went in, we met with her. We told her what the plan was. We told her where we currently were. And she came back to us with like a list of recommendations and programs that Leo had that we could avail of for free. So the first thing we did was the Profit Academy and that was fantastic. I got one meeting in a room full of energetic people and then that wrecking ball of COVID came along and put us all in our box and we were back at home then doing lots of courses virtually. But COVID has been incredibly challenging, obviously, but at the same time, although it highlighted and it was a magnifying glass on our weaknesses, it really gave us a chance to up our game. And luckily enough, Robert and I are both very positive people. And instead of going, oh, we can't do this and we can't do that again, what can we do? And at the time, gardening was taken off massive and digital media was taken off massive. And we were like, let's get ourselves prepped. So it had always been our intention to get a website, but that was something down there, like that was in there. I was like, what do you plan in 5 years' time? And was like, oh, we'll have a website. So we start working on that straight away. So we got our funding at 90%.
That's the one that too many people do not take.
I know, it's amazing.
It's nuts.
We have a second one. We have got a second one approved just before Christmas. So now I can look at my SEO and I can get us ranking higher on Google organically without having to pay for it. Now, in the last 11 or 12 months, I have done a phenomenal amount of courses and training and upskilling. And I have to say, I love it.
And what you were telling me was that you're not just stuck with Carlo Leo.
No, I look around. Because I'm homeschooling now, when I say homeschooling, it's, you know, struggling to homeschool.
Getting back to school soon.
Yeah, they're going back to school soon. I have to look around at what suits my agenda and what suits my timescale. So I looked around to the likes of Leash and Fingal and Waterford and Wexford and all these places. And like I've done Twitter through Wexford or through Waterford. I'm doing a great QQI in digital marketing through Fingal. Leash, I've done Photoshop. Like different bits and pieces that fit into my schedule that I can still be homeschooling, that I can still be working in the business. So I have looked around and it was actually Claire Leo where I found out about that great business show podcast.
Well done to Claire. Claire Leo, a big shout out. We love you.
Yes. So I am keeping an eye on what's going on. And it was actually Carlo Leo that recommended the Acorns program to me.
Tell me about the Acorns program.
Acorns program. I can't speak highly enough of the Acorns program. To be accepted, first of all, I think is a great, great achievement personally. I'm very, very impressed with myself. It's just a fantastic network of like-minded women, business people, working mommies. We all have the same struggles. We might be in different industries in different parts of the country, but it's the same struggle.
Tell me the person that runs the Acorns program.
Paula Fitzsimons.
Paula Fitzsimons has now been mentioned in this show. I think this is the week five.
Week five.
Without any prompting, she is a one woman, one person, just a machine for getting women into business and keeping them there and really pushing them. She's incredible.
She is incredible. And it filters down through all the different sections. Like my particular round table is we're from different parts of the country, but we're all agriculture based. So we all have we all have the same concerns. Most of us are working mommies as well. It's just been fantastic. I actually had an Acorns program yesterday. So I have another one in March and then we have our forum in April.
You had your Acorns program yesterday when I rang you.
You did.
And then, so that's a different story. Anyway.
It's just fantastic.
Tell anybody who's listening that what have you learnt or what is it doing for you?
It's network. It's, you know what? It's building confidence. We had to give an elevator pitch. Stuff that I probably would have put on the long finger. I mean, I'll do that another time or not confident enough yet, but you're in a room. But you're in a room with people that you trust. And you can take the feedback because you know it's well-intentioned. We discuss topics like yesterday. It was about KPIs. We discuss our business plan, our goals.
Key performance indicators,
exactly. We discuss our goals, our plans, our SMART goals, our smarter goals. Lots of different facets of business. And there's always somebody there to give you advice and prompt you and help you. And they're kind of like a virtual safety net that you know you're not alone, because self-employment is very lonely. And when you're banana bread baking and homeschooling and all those things going on, you're surrounded by people, but you are on your own. You can't get to the coffee shop. You can get to Aldi, Lidl, Tesco, Dunnes. You can get to all the good retailers for an hour to do your grocery. But that's a job in itself.
Come here to me, because I would be a huge proponent of online. But you have taught me something new, because you have found a very different way of selling, which is called the phone.
The phone. We are online, that is quite true, but we are online across Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, where Robert does an awful lot of advertising on Done Deal as well. But we would still rather pick up the phone to us, because I don't want to sell you what you don't need. If you come to me and say, I want to put an evergreen hedge around my house and I want it to be completely blocked off, I wouldn't sell you a beech hedge because that will lose leaves in the winter. Now, not entirely, it's still a fantastic hedge. But I don't want to sell you what you don't need. I don't want to sell you something and then you come back to me in a year's time and not be happy. I'm not here for one sale. I'm here for life. I want customers for life. We have, the first place we delivered was over in Knock, County Mayo. And Robert and Peter set off at like ridiculous 5 o'clock in the morning or something. And when they got there, the people had breakfast for them and a cup of tea. And Robert rang me and he was like, they've paid me. And I got breakfast and a cup of tea for me and Daddy and we're on our way home. And we were like, we're on to a winner. Those people buy us off us every couple of years. Like even we were in the Farmer's Journal in the start of January and they contacted us and sent us pictures of how our trees have done since. You know, it's fantastic. We have sold trees from the Sheep's Head Peninsula in County Cork right up to the shores of Strangford Loch. It's fantastic the amount of people we meet from all different sectors of life. Initially, when we started, farmers would have been our largest market. It would have been about 70% farmers. But the shift in online sales, the shift in people's awareness of the environment and biodiversity, like our market is now 50% farmers, 50% homeowners. Although I suppose you could account for, like we'd have commercial businesses and community groups as well that are looking for native trees to encourage biodiversity.
And you have gone, theoretically, exporting because you are now serving into Northern Ireland.
Since Brexit, we haven't actually sold anything into Northern Ireland, but historically, we have a very good customer up in the north and that surrounding area. Joseph Murphy, he is an Olympic horse riding champion and he'd often send us videos of, like, say he's training horses in an arena or something, and all that hedging came from a lovely little farm in Hackettstown, County Carlow, and that is a very proud moment. Yeah, called Cullen Nurseries. That's a very proud moment for us, and to have those customer relations are very, very important.
But come here to me. You mentioned there that you haven't, since Brexit kicked in, been selling.
No, we haven't. It just hasn't come up. To be honest, we've just been focusing on our local area.
But so therefore, it's not you know, it hasn't.
No, it's not something we've avoided. It's not something we've avoided. But Carlo Leo and all the Leos, I think, ran a Look for Local campaign and Shop Local and Champion Green. And that was fantastic for our business. Just absolutely rocketed sales. Like we have, I'd say in our local area, we've tenfold more customers than we had, say, 3 years ago.
That
like
is all really, those little really campaigns. Good, yeah.
Yeah, all those little campaigns that the Leo are running are fantastic.
Sustaining that, how can you both sustain and grow further?
We have been very lucky. We bought in a recession in 2009 and we actually purchased in the COVID recession of 2020. We bought 8 acres of land near us. So that will take our nursery. We currently own 11 acres and we nursery is on about 6 and he keeps cattle as a little hobby on 5 acres. But now
she's just thrown her eyes to heaven. I don't really know what that means, but
if he spent as much time talking to me as he does to them. I know, look, they're a hobby and he loves it. And it's he grew up in a town. He used to keep pet sheep, pet lambs in the backyard. His mommy used to feed the pet lambs for them when they were in school. So he's always had agriculture in his blood. And he, I wouldn't mind, Conal, he wasn't a farmer when I married him. And it was one of the reasons I did marry him. And the ink was not dry on the marriage papers when my father said, if you got yourself a herd number, I'd sell you a few cattle cheap. And my father's a sheep farmer. I hate sheep. Spent years in the wrong gap. I tell everybody this. So then all of a sudden we were farmers. So we're combining horticulture and agriculture to make a living.
But to sustain and to grow the nursery, what are you going to do?
We bought the 8 acres of land. So it'll take us from 6 acres of nursery to possibly 14 acres in the next couple of years. So that's the plan.
And is that chunky in terms of what your output is? That, you know, does that transform the business?
It will transform the business. See, our plants are cyclical. So what we will start lining in, the process of lining in March 2021. But those plants won't be for sale until November 22 or possibly later. We'll have a bigger plant called a root ball laurel that could be 3 or 4 years in the ground. The bigger they are, the more money you can make on them, obviously. But that our plants are cyclical. So what we've dug up this year, that ground has to be minded and fertilised and prepared for lining out. But we won't be able to pull out of that until like November 22. So we're always, we have that challenge as well. It's cyclical and we have to rotate land and, you know, we have to have enough space to be able to do that.
Can you go international?
Can we go international? The market is there. There's certainly a market in England for it. It's not something that we've investigated. It's not something that we're working towards yet.
But maybe there's a Leo course in
I'm
that.
Sure there is, and I'll be certainly looking into it once I get these little people back to school. There's certainly a market there for Irish, definitely. We're a Department of Agriculture approved nursery as well, so That's a string to our bow.
That should open up the EU to you as
yes,
well,
yes, hopefully. Yeah, it's
Germans,
definitely
French,
potential. Yeah. Definitely.
Come here to me. We'll have to wrap up. But before you do, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
I'm going to say two people in a heartbeat, Irish and international. I'm going with Amy Huberman.
Okay.
Just love Amy Huberman, her positivity. I think she's great crack, great banter. I could totally see her and I having like the banter in work. And internationally, Kamala Harris. She's just fantastic, breaking barriers, just shining a light for women all over the world.
What you should do is try to get in contact with Ms. Harris and see whether you could plant some of your nursery trees in the White House or I don't know where the...
I could plant them in Ireland for her for when her and Joe come over, couldn't I?
Yeah.
I could certainly invite them. It'd be a good idea.
There's going to be a lot of...
Yeah, plus, she's a great dancer. I think she would take on the Jerusalem Challenge. I think her, Amy and I would take over the horticultural world. I think we'd be a dream team.
Katrina Cullen of Cullen Nurseries, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And thank you so much for going onto the website, getting in contact, persisting with it.
Persisting, exactly, yep.
Because you did
determined,
persist.
Determined.
Yep. She got me every which way. But we're delighted.
I had a plan.
We are delighted to have had you on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show is brought to you courtesy of De Facto, the all-natural Mayo-based shaving oil brand with world ambitions. Founder Tom Murphy is looking for top distributors of grooming products around the world to bring the world's best shaving oil to skin worldwide. If you know someone in the shaving or grooming business anywhere at all, please tell Tom about them on defactoshave.com. He's on a mission to build a world brand, one shave at a time.
That Great Business
Show. Luella Morton got the itch. She had a hugely successful career in the IT industry for many years, but she still got the itch. The itch to set up her own business, that is, and that's what she did. Her company that she co-founded 5 years ago is Test Reach, currently based at Nova UCD, part of the UCD Research and Innovation Unit. What caught my eye was that this cloud-based exam platform must have been a major, major beneficiary of the COVID lockdown worldwide, particularly, as they say, they can provide any assessment online. It covers everything from simple tests and feedback surveys through to formal high-stake exams, they're the important ones, with multiple paper variants. Luella Morton, welcome to thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
Thank you so much, Conal. It's lovely to be here.
Have you cured the itch?
Oh, that's a great question. And I dread to think what curing the itch actually means. But certainly from a business perspective, I'm really enjoying running a business. I'd have to say it's just everything I dreamed it would be. I've never been one for
late
taking...
Late nights, worry, digestive problems.
But
you had a proper job once.
Oh, I did, yeah.
Quite a number of them, actually.
Yes, yes. And I really enjoyed them. I've always been in the tech industry. You know, my background is computer science in Trinity. And since then, I've always been a kind of gadget freak. You know, I love all the technology, figuring around things. And I'd have to say that, I really enjoyed it all. And but the more experience that I got, the more I kind of, I guess, found it difficult to, I really enjoyed making the decisions. And I didn't enjoy when the decision was handed to me on a plate and just told, go and do it. I liked to be involved early in the process and not being given the wrong decision, perhaps.
It took me possibly 20 years to figure that one out, is that I didn't really like being told how to do things. Mm. And I don't know whether that's a madness or an arrogance or a whatever, but that is part of the itch.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's the freedom you have of knowing, you know, you basically have enough rope to hang yourself, you know, and it's your head is on the line. You make the decisions and you have to live with the consequences. So it does give you freedom, but it also gives that risk, I guess.
I love learning things on That Great Business Show. And one of the things that you have already off air taught me is when formal exams started.
Yes. The first formal exams were actually run over 3,000 years ago, and it was back in China, and it was to enter the civil service. And back in those days, you know, it was your traditional kind of pen and paper, but the upshot of cheating was a lot more harsh.
I do remember this part.
Yeah, in that if you were caught cheating, both the candidate who was cheating and the invigilator were both put to death. So there was a big issue with cheating.
Okay, I think I might go back to the book. So
yeah, exactly. It's not something you'd want to do.
And out of that came, and it just continued. Yeah. Up to the point how did this business come into your head and your co-founder? You better name your co-founder.
Yes, exactly. Well, it was Sheena Bainey and myself a number of years ago really started looking into this. And I think the original idea came really from, I had been working in the Educational Technology Centre for maybe, the last 25 years or so. And, I had seen simple assessments being rolled out, multiple choice quizzes, that type of thing. And I had a few organizations talking about, could we run these over a Skype call? So, because we want to make sure they don't look up the answers. And that kind of started me thinking about, hold on one second, you know, that makes a lot of sense, you know, being able to do things remotely. Because I think, you know, the demand for qualifications has never been higher, because if you are better qualified, statistics show that you will get paid more on average, and you'll also be less, there's less chance you'll be unemployed. So there's huge demand for it. Now, when you look at how you get a qualification, you do the learning, and then the traditional method is you pass one or more exams. Now, if you look at learning, there's loads of ways of scaling learning. E-learning started off as a bit of a kind of PowerPoint on steroids, but now it's far more effective. You know, you have immersive learning, you have virtual reality, you've got virtual classrooms. There's loads of mechanisms there that people really effectively learn remotely. But we still have this thing of, okay, now the exam. And, you know, you come along to a test centre, you take a day off work, and you have to sit there with the pen and paper. It's almost like, you know, going through all the steps to buy a watch on Amazon and being told you have to drive to Cork to get it. You know, like, it's that kind of craziness. So it did make me think. At the time, I kind of looked at, well, is there any other technology? And I found there was a couple of US providers providing solutions in the university market. And when I had a look at it, I mean, being a technologist, I was a bit kind of, disappointed with what I saw. And I just thought...
You thought they were rubbish.
I did a bit. And there was a lot of room for improvement, let's say. And I discussed it with Sheena. And from there, we, you know, took it and kind of did a kind of a proof of concept and a few other things.
Had you hadn't set up at this stage, you hadn't?
No, this was all pre...
So are you sitting there with a cup of tea, bottle of wine or something and chatting away, or...
I tell you exactly what it is. About 6 or 7 different colours of Post-its, and sitting on a couch with a big white wall in front of us and putting up the requirement, not the solution, but more the requirement. You need to be able to run exams, you need the security, you need this, you need that, you need that. And putting them all in different colours and mapping out it was an MVP, a minimum viable product. And we still have pictures. And those pictures, some of them are framed, you know, that we have them framed in the office, and it's all like these Post-its everywhere.
But this was, as I say, before you set up initially.
Completely, yeah. Yeah, okay. It was just to map it out, like what would be the minimum thing? Because building technology is really expensive. It is incredibly expensive. And it's huge competition with all the MNCs, the big technology MNCs. I mean,
MNCs,
multinational corporations, sorry. You know, the Microsofts, yeah. the Googles and everything. They're
they
fantastic.
Still make a horse's ass of many. In fact, before this program, yeah. or this podcast, I had a problem with Microsoft and printing. And my God, wouldn't you imagine at this day and age?
I know.
We won't go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Tell me about, because I just love these things. The moment that you and Sheena said, we're going to go for it. It's like being up in the air about to jump out with no parachute,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
What was that like? And when did you
do
that?
It was very exciting. That's the first thing to say, because the two of us, you know, I think it's very easy to get caught up in a whole thing of, I want to start a business. And almost, you know, there's people looking all the time, what can I start a business in? And they grab anything they can get their hands on, you know? And that's great.
That
yeah, scratch the itch and grab anything, you know? But one of the things about that is that sometimes you can get so caught up in the enthusiasm and it's not objective, it's very subjective because of all the feelings you're having, that it may not be really a solid business idea. You know, your incomings may never equal your outgoings or pass them. So,
which is not good.
No, it's not good, particularly if you've had a good employment and you've used to being paid really well. You know, the last thing you want is to not be paid really well because you're going to miss things, you know. So I think that... I think one of the big things going for us is both of us had an awful lot of experience in this area. And I actually had a lot of contacts of the kinds within customers who would be buying this kind of thing. So I had really good relationships with them, and I was able to reach out to some of them and kind of say, listen, imagine if you had the ability to do X, Y, Z. And they were like, oh, you know, that would be very, very interesting. And kind of selling them a vision.
Yeah.
And that allowed us to kind of look at, exploring it further. We approached Enterprise Ireland. We got a feasibility grant from them that allowed us to kind of explore it a bit further and get some stakes in the ground as to, is this something that people will buy? From my own experience, I knew they would buy it. I absolutely knew. I knew these customers well. And I really knew that they would buy it, and I knew that this was the future, because running exams and test centres is neither scalable nor easily managed when you try and reach into new geographies.
And by scaling, what you're talking about is that there are only so many village halls or university halls or whatever.
Yeah.
But with your solution... There is no limit.
No, there is no limit. Your only limit is technology. And I mean, you can add more processors, you can add more speed, you can add more whatever. Now, obviously, you do have, you know, broadband constraints if you're running in areas where there's intermittent broadband. But there's technical solutions around that as well. But certainly, you know, like if you think of, you know, you're running a qualification and you get a call in from, you know, Germany to say, right, we have 3 people here who'd really like to sit that exam. You know, what do you do? Do you fly over there? Do you hire a solicitor over there? How do you courier over the papers? What happens if they get stuck in Brexit somewhere, you know? Or what happens if their papers get lost in the courier home? You know, it's fraught with issues.
You are very experienced in IT, but I can hear you're super at sales, are you? You're trying to sell this to me at the moment.
I guess, well, I'm just very passionate about it, you know? And I really enjoy, like one of the big things for me is bringing technology. I'm really passionate about technology, and it can make a huge difference to loads of different areas of life. And I do find it, you know, when you hear all the negativity, oh, the internet, you know, oh, you want to be careful of your children, all of this. I totally get that. But you've got to put it in context that everyone's always afraid of things they don't know. And at the moment, a lot of parents of my age don't know an awful lot about technology. They don't know how to control it. They don't know how to, what to look for. You know, there's an information gap, and that leads to, oh, technology and all this, you know, scaring. But I think that, you know, the benefits...
Same parents still will go onto their Facebook pages. Oh, absolutely. And all so that doesn't really...
No, it doesn't really stop.
Does it? No.
So I am big into sales. Yes, I'm passionate about it.
One of the things that actually stopped me when I was having a chat with you off air the other day was I said, you know, how big are you? How big is the company? I was amazed. How big is the company?
Well, we have around 60 or 70 employees at this stage. And then
hang on a second now. Here's my pen dropping.
Yeah.
And how many countries are you in?
Well, we have 60 or 70 employees, plus we also have a few hundred exam supervisors. So they're the people who, you know, are supervising all the time.
How come nobody has heard about you?
I don't know.
It is a fantastic story. Because tell me, how many countries are you in?
We're running exams in over 150 countries at the moment, yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
It is a wow.
Yeah. Some of our customers, you know, they're running 20,000 exams a month with us, yeah. Yeah. So it's huge. Like, the business is growing hugely. And we're every year on year, like, we're exponential growth.
And we're not allowed to say COVID has been good to you, but COVID has been good to you because obviously it's just focused yet again. People don't want to travel. And you made the point earlier, anyway, is this idea of taking a day off and sitting there and
it's,
waiting.
It's drudgery. You know, exams are drudgery. And you also have the factor of, you know, I don't write anymore. So if I had to write an exam for 3 hours, I would be up the walls. I wouldn't be able to do it. I actually get carpal tunnel, so I can't do it anyway. So, you know, and there's an awful lot of people like that. And you layer in things like, you know, spreadsheets or drawing or those type of things. And it becomes more and more difficult to really, that kind of traditional approach of writing starts to become really, really inhibitive.
And you were telling me that you have brought in all kinds of different types of exams because, again, technology is the only limit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so tell me what kind of exams that I could be allowed to enjoy sitting these days.
Yeah, well, there's loads of different ones. I mean, we have nearly 50 question types. So that covers a load of things. So of course you have your kind of traditional multiple choice, you have your writing, you have your spreadsheet, you have those type of ones. But we have other ones like, you know, dragging things all around the page.
I'd be good at that.
Yeah, image hotspots, identifying things. We have hazard perception, where you might be watching a video and you have to click when you see something that shouldn't be in the picture.
Whack-a-mole.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. And the faster you click, the more points you get. We have things like a lot of organizations now are starting to do more record videos for candidates or record voice, where you might be shown, say, a picture of an X-ray and you have to give your professional opinion on it. And all of these different question types are much more multidimensional. And they really allow you to understand the individual's ability to apply knowledge as opposed to just taking a dipstick of a summative assessment or knowledge in time. You know, it's much more interesting and much, much more engaging for the candidates as well. It's not boring.
Everybody listening to you, because I did the same, is thinking, hang on a second, we can all cheat because they can't see. But you've copped that.
Yeah. I mean, you always get that. Hold on a second. Like, if I was at home, I would have the Encyclopedia Britannica out in front of me and nobody would see it and all this.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I mean... Yeah. That was a byword once upon a time. And if you said that to a kid, they'd say, the what?
What? Yeah, exactly. So there's all sorts of notions when people first hear about, you know, because the actual concept is, you know, instead of you presenting at a test center in the traditional manner to sit your exam, you actually can, you just need a computer and an internet connection. And when you take the exam, we watch over you. Via video, audio and remote screen share. So we can see you, we can hear you and we can also see your screen. Now, it's very upfront and personal. I mean, we're only a foot and a half away from you. So if you start looking down to the left, the supervisor will challenge and they'll ask, you know, hello, I notice you keep looking down to the left. Would you mind panning the camera down there? Would you mind telling me what you're looking at? You know, so...
Does that happen often?
I wouldn't say we run a lot of professional exams. We run a lot of very high stakes medical exams, accountancy exams, all sorts of exams. And people have a lot at stake. I mean, if they're caught doing something suspicious, there's an awful lot to lose. So you don't tend to see it. Sometimes you do, like we had a case there. I always remember it was one of the funniest cases ever, where a guy was taking an exam and literally there was a head of a person at the side of the desk. And, you know, you could clearly, all of our sessions, I should say as well, are recorded. So if there's some sort of issue, the examining body can review the footage.
Go on.
Oh, no, it's all recorded. Yeah. So this head was there.
Love it.
Yeah. And so the supervisor said, excuse me, there's somebody there. And the guy was like,
no, there's not.
So, but the nice thing is with Test Reach, we can pull the plug on the exam. We agree all the exam protocols, like all the rules are different for each organization. Mm-hmm. So we go through a whole process where we have, default rules. So we have low, medium and high infringements. And then we set those rules for each customer.
And
in that particular instance, that was a terminate. So we pulled the plug on the exam immediately. They were the rules of the exam that we had agreed with the customer.
And was the person who was saying that there was no head, did he or she, did they ever admit there was a head or?
That we don't know about that. Okay. So we refer everything to the examining body. Okay. It's not our decision. So we give them the video of the exam. We give them the supervisor's transcripts. We give them, you know, this everything that they need. And then it's up to themselves to investigate, or there might be some sort of whatever.
I wonder what the head is doing. Is he down below there saying, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 and writing it down and showing it to us?
I know. Well, I think the way it was is that the head was looking at the screen to see what was written on the screen and then holding up some sort of answers or something. I'm not 100% sure, but it was an interesting, it was such blatant, you know, that you're kind of like, really? You know, but it takes all sorts, I guess.
I love it.
Yeah.
Right. Let's get back to the business.
Yes, absolutely.
How much more can you grow the business? I mean, you are big already. Are you a world player in examinations?
Well, you think of assessment software, and there's lots of assessment software. If you Google multiple choice, you'll find hundreds and hundreds of companies. But when you're talking about high-stake exams, the complexity of the solution is far greater. So, think of authoring. We have some customers who might have hundreds of authors. They have all workflows where I might write a question, but I have to send it to a subject matter expert. They have to approve it. They might be allowed to edit the question. They might not. You have to track versions of every single question. It becomes really complex. And when you get to that level, also marking, my goodness, marking takes on, you could write a thesis on marking, one section of marking, because you get into things like standardization. You look at the Leaving Cert, say, you have to make sure if you have hundreds of markers that they are all marking to standard. You might have blind marking or double blind marking. So if I'm within 2 percentage points of a grade band, it automatically goes to a second marker to check it. You know, there's a lot of complexity there. So with that kind of complexity, there's only a handful of solutions globally that can really deliver that kind of functionality. And we would certainly be one of them, yes.
Wow. Okay. That's really good to hear. So listen, I could spend all day talking to you. I need to know just very briefly one thing, which is the Leaving Cert, because you just mentioned it there.
Yeah.
Could you sort the Leaving Cert debacle that is at the moment?
I think it's not a simple solution. You know, it's not as simple as just turning on a flag and running it. I think in theory, yes, the Leaving Cert, there is potential for the Leaving Cert to be done via remote proctoring. But on paper, you would have to tease out a lot of issues around that, particularly things like access to a computer, ensuring that you can't just give a child, whatever age, a computer on an exam day and expect them to be able to navigate around it. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody who's used to using a Mac and you give them a PC. It wouldn't be fair. So how do you build that, you know, that they're using the same machine over a number of years, they get very familiar with it. There's a whole host of factors that would need to be considered to make sure that the exam is effective and that the exam is valid.
But it is possible.
I would absolutely say yes. Yeah, and some countries are actively looking at it at the moment. We've certainly had visibility of a number of countries who are looking
European
at it.
ones?
The one I'm thinking about is not European, no. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a matter of if. I think it's a matter of when.
I would have thought so,
I think there will be some element of it. But I also do think, to be honest, I know I'm in the exams business. I am not in favour of summative exams as being the be-all and end-all. Summative assessment is where you take a course and then there's an exam at the end of it. I think it is not reflective of a person's true abilities and can have the impact of, particularly in a child,
Luella,
crushing them.
I got through exams. There's hope for everybody.
I know.
So I'm all in favour of them. They work for me.
I know.
I still want to know how big the company can grow. You're at 70 at the moment, you say?
Yeah, we're just under 70, yeah.
And you don't need funding?
No, we don't. No, we don't.
Does that mean you're profitable?
I would. Yes, we are, yeah. Yeah, I think...
What is it about profit in Irish people?
They seem to have an allergic reaction to it, you know?
You've just gone, I don't want to talk about that.
I guess, you know, I'm old school. I believe that you know... Ultimately, you have to have your incomings greater than your outgoings. That's the bottom line, or else it's not a sustainable business. Now, really, there's two ways you can start a business. You know, you can immediately go out and look for seed funding, and there's an awful lot of investment options out there. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're right or they're wrong, but they are different, and they are very different. And if you go down a road of, you know, I'm going to get funding and I'm going to buy my sales and then I'm going to continue, you know, there is... for want of a better word, there is a bit of a pyramid scheme going on there, because if you're always running at a loss, you need to fill that loss, and you will stress all the time about where's the money coming from. You know, I've hired all these people now, the revenue hasn't caught up, et cetera, et cetera.
Tesla, the world's largest, I think, by value car company, still hasn't turned a penny. So, I shouldn't say that, actually. It isn't, you know.
Yeah.
Return on investment.
Yeah, I think that the thing is, though, some companies absolutely succeed. Like, you look at Twitter, you know, they never had any kind of revenue model, and look at the value of them, you know. But there's, and that's absolutely a valid way to go. You know, you can look at it, but you just need to, you know, caveat emptor, you know, you need to be really careful about what you're getting into, because you're typically getting into institutional investors, you're getting into term sheets. You may be the CEO now, but you won't be in 3 years' time if you do something wrong. And also, so many founders get diluted out of it. And
That is the horrible truth.
And the horrible truth is that, you know, if you're starting a business and you go down a road where your incomings aren't going to be greater than your outgoings, you're going to be reliant on third parties or funding or something. And you may get into a situation where, you know, you are just, you know, a pawn, and things kind of overtake you.
Give me your 30 seconds, because we are tight on time. Your 30 seconds on mentors, because I thought this was really interesting. We're big fans of mentors.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really like mentors. I think there's two things I'd say. The first thing is, you just need to be careful on the mentors you get, because a lot of people have a lot of ideas and a lot of them are very valid, but they may not be the right idea for your business. And certainly I know we're successful, you know, so we get contacted by an awful lot of people offering to do, you know, mentor us and all of this type of thing. And, you know, there is an awful lot of advice out there, and I've certainly found some advice to be good, but some advice to be brutal, you know. And even though that person was in the right, did the right thing that they thought was right at that time, it certainly wouldn't have been right for our business. And I had a board member at one stage telling me that the best thing to go was indirect for a particular company I was in. And it would have been the worst thing in the world, because it was complex software. It wasn't like, you know, do you want to buy a pen? Here's a pen. This was more like, you know, do you want to buy a nuclear submarine? You know, it was really complicated. So going indirect would have been the rocky parachute.
So choose your mentors wisely. Final. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Do you know, I would hire somebody like Graham Norton. I actually would.
That's different.
Yeah, I would, because the guy is smart. He is
very
funny.
I think, yeah.
He would be interesting. And he has a lot of different strings to his bow. You know, he's an Irish guy who's come up, and he's now head of the, you know, chat shows, if you like, in the BBC. And he's also got a lot of different things. You know, he's written a book. He's eloquent.
Many books.
And also the wine. You know, and I just think...
And he sits on the biggest chat show in Britain, drinking his wine.
There we go.
Product placement, I think it's called.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, that kind of person, particularly if you're starting a business, it is so important to have people who just have nous and who have skills in different areas. Because if you are very, you know, centered on, you know, and problem solvers, you know, that guy thinks on his feet an awful lot. You can see, like, he knows about his subjects, the people, his guests, and he's able to, you know, interact with them. And that doesn't come by accident. I mean, he's done his homework. And I think, you know, it's almost like the swan going along where the feet are going nuts underneath. And that's the kind of people who I really like, where or can add a lot of benefits, certainly in the early stages, because they can do loads of different things and think on their feet.
We will contact him and ask him to become either a mentor or a some add-on.
Yeah.
To, I'd say he loves exams as well.
Oh, I doubt him somehow.
Listen, it is fascinating. What a company. What a fantastic success.
Thank you.
Luella Mark, I should have talked to you as well about why Nova and lots of good things like that. But why Nova?
Oh, well, it's a fantastic base and the facilities there are really, really good.
This is
the
new city,
yeah? Yeah, absolutely. It's Nexus, actually, we're in. So Nova is kind of the early incubation and then Nexus is really where you spread wings.
Large corporations
well,
like
it
yours.
Is. There's much bigger companies well, there's a range of companies, I should say, in Nexus. But, you know, they have fantastic facilities there, a really good network for, say, if you want to do any research through the university. Yeah. Also, you know, PR opportunities. But the facilities and the community, the sense of community there is really, really good.
On beautiful rolling green acres as well.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It is, and very convenient.
Yeah.
Luella Morton, co-founder of testreach.com. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 23. Our stars of sound here at the fabulous Dublin South FM podcast studios was the eponymously named Keith Stars, who is today's sound engineer. Peter Royce will take his Mr. Sheen to a recording later and polish it all up to make us Ireland's best sounding podcast by far. My thanks to this week's scouts that include Micheál Whelan at the aforementioned UCD Nova Nexus, who pointed us in Luella Morton's way. Ireland's top business editor, Vincent Wall, suggested I chat with Fergus Kerrigan. Deborah Brock winged her way to us via Sahini Day, she of MPEL, who has been on That Great Business Show before. And we can and will take all the credit for getting Katrina Cullen onto the show via our website, where she shared her story. And if you know any other great stories or businesses that deserve to be highlighted on thatgreatbusinessshow.com, go straight to the website and click that share your story button. And another big shout for our pals at Wexford Preserves, a shout out for sending us their new pink grapefruit marmalade to try. I did mention it last week. I have now tried it. It is gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. Better still, 50% of the profits from each jar goes to the ever-deserving Marie Keating Foundation. Finally, our thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shave. Try their world's best shaving oil for a week, and I swear you will never, ever, ever go back to the horrid old shaving foam. Buy it online now and tell me what you think, please. That is me, from me, Conal O'Moran. We will talk again, and next week on That Great Business Show, Slán Tomáil.